Stand back! There's a hurricane coming through!
Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com with us for the next hour, talking all things Tennessee Titans, brought to you by Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse and Sealmaster. PK will be with me tomorrow on the program as well, so looking forward to that. PK, we talked a lot about Cam Ward yesterday, as Rex Rowe joins us now in a bucket hat and a full pair of sunglasses, so he's prepared on the video stream.
Nobody's finding him.
So you came out with a piece yesterday at PaulKuharski.com highlighting the fourth quarter and how Cam Ward went from, I believe, 38% of his passes being completed through three quarters to 72.2% in the fourth. And there's a lot that's gone into this. I mean, you were texting back and forth with Orlovsky yesterday about some things that he said on film, and we went through Orlovsky's tweet about how he's basically like, man, go look at the Cam Ward film. It's really good. He's going to be a top eight player at the position easily. So as you kind of worked through this, what did you discover about Ward and what the differences were from a pretty bad three quarters into a fourth quarter where you're talking 193 yards and a completion percentage of 72.2%?
I mean, he does downplay the difference. Callahan told him at half, just all you got to do is put your eyes where they're supposed to be, make sure your footwork matches it, and just throw the ball. That's the simple directive from the Titans. Like, what throws him off of that? Well, first and foremost, rushers, right? Rushers throw you off of that. And the people getting in your way, people taking your eyes off of where they're supposed to be. But then also Nick Holtz was talking yesterday about, Buda Baker and disguised coverages. And so, if you have a guy like Buda Baker who's starting near the line of scrimmage, will drop into cover two, will go over into the flat in cover three, will blitz. There's a lot to sort through there. And teams that are capable of it are going to do things like that to try to confuse a young quarterback, and that takes your eyes away from what they'd like your eyes to be on. He seemed to just kind of snap into it, and they need to have him stay snapped into it. Orlovsky was raving about him. Orlovsky showed plays outside of the fourth quarter, a couple of which were drops, but you know what he sent me, he put online, you know, a couple, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other plays. And then somebody put the video Orlovsky got burned for putting video online. Yeah. It's so ridiculous that, you know, if you're of certain stature, the league burns you. And he's a partner of the league, ESPN. Right. But the league prevents him from putting video on. But if you're lower stature, all kinds of people can put video online. So I tweeted back and I said, you know, I would like to see some of these analysts who love him discuss the bad plays. Show me some of the bad plays and tell me what's going on. Because even if you give Cam Ward, Pro Football Reference says 8 drops. I think they're very conservative with drops. I gave him 12 drops. And that boosts him to a 59% completion percentage, which still isn't what you want.
Right.
And so I tweeted that back at him, and he said, I would tell you not a lot of baked-in easy completions to boost percentage, not a ton of RPO or easy free completions. Trust me, not perfect, but so much good. So that's a story on Cam Ward now. Now you need fourth quarter Cam Ward. He set a standard there. How much of that can we see? I'm not expecting four quarters of it, but I'm expecting more than one.
You know, another thing, like with the stat on the completion percentage, you know, all the other quarterbacks have drops too, you know, so
right.
It's like.
And that's, people want me to throw out the throwaways. Well, all the other quarterbacks have throwaways
right.
too.
Yes, exactly. I think that's really interesting. I guess it's, yeah, obviously he's been bullish about him, and it seems like there are some people who are like that. I mean, Riddick is another one, right? And I feel like anybody who's watched everything in real time, I know you tell me, PK, is there anybody who has watched, you know, Cam Ward in real time throughout this whole thing who thinks, oh, there's no question this guy's going to be one of the top guys in the league.
I don't think so. Not no question. I kind of feel like him about him as I felt about Marcus early. And about Marcus early, I regularly said, I think he has the skill set and the mindset to be a franchise quarterback. I'll say that about Cam. I think he has the skill set and the mindset to be a franchise quarterback. But there's a long way between here and there.
And it's so much of it is like doing the, you know, again, just he's a rookie, but it's like doing the mundane that sort of that keeps drives going and you know, just but maybe you know, to the point of the RPO, and this has been a conversation, right? Why aren't there more RPO stuff like that? Maybe they are making it harder on him than they should.
Well, I think they've talked a lot about the short stuff that he's passing up. So, you know, right. Orlovsky saying not a lot of baked-in easy completions. I think there are some baked-in easy completions, and they've talked about him being a hunter, and he's hunting for, you know, there was one of these games early, maybe it was the Rams game, where he was throwing past an open Tyler Lockett into a more difficult window downfield. That's not them. That's not the coaches. The coaches have provided a play where Tyler Lockett is open underneath, and Cam Ward is passing on that. It took me back very vividly to an opposite scenario where Jeff Fisher said, and it echoes and echoes and echoes with those of us who were around, never pass one up to get to another one, which drove us crazy. Like, occasionally, you got to pass one up to get to another one. And the Titans were never a big play team. You know, and Yancey Thigpen, people laugh about Yancey Thigpen, but he came in and said, listen, it's nice to drive down the field in a 19-play drive, but nothing breaks a defense like a big play touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, and, well, it's also and there was no talk of that here for years and years, and they never had guys who could do it.
Well, and look, I don't want Ward to swing too far the other way either because you don't like, I don't want him to just turn into some guy that's taking a check down all the time. But I do, like, if you're going to move the ball and you're gonna score points on a consistent basis – sometimes that does come down to taking what the defense gives you. And you know, the hunter part of his game is great. But I think one thing that is going to be interesting to watch the rest of the year is how much progress does he make on taking what's in front of him, as we watched before. But I'm with you. Like I like the hunter mindset. You just got to know when to use it. And I think he's still learning that.
Yeah. And then to Joe's point, early on that stuff, right?
Yes.
But – you know, having the success he had in that fourth quarter, I think, is reaffirming in a lot of ways. And I'm sure this week, thematically, they're talking to him about all the things that went well in that game. But if he comes out and you know, Max Crosby is in his face three times in the first quarter, a lot of things change.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So you said yesterday you feel good about Latham playing this week against the Raiders. We'll see what that looks like as practice goes on this week. But look, I've said it many times throughout the offseason, and unfortunately we just haven't had a chance to see it so far this year. Like, the expectation for him should be not only to be a good right tackle, but to be a great right tackle. Like, at the end of the year, they need to be talking about him being a great player for them at the right tackle spot. So, you know, we know the weight that Jeffrey Simmons has lost and what he looks like. Obviously, J.C. Latham did similar stuff this offseason, lost some weight, got his body in better shape. What should the expectation be right from the jump?
Yeah, it's not going to be Simmons caliber. Obviously, he's not a Simmons caliber player. Hasn't been, and only been in the league a little while. But, yeah, you know, the hype train was going on J.C. Latham in the preseason. And look, the Titans have had two pretty good offensive line games. You come out of that game with a win and everybody's now hunting for the positives, understandably so. And one of them is, hey, the offensive line the last 2 weeks has looked better. You know, is this the beginning of something? And you hope it is. But the Max Crosby is the kind of guy that will feed you a setback if you're not ready. And we know that Dan Moore has problems with big-time pass rushers.
And sometimes small-time pass rushers.
Yeah, sometimes small-time pass rushers. But particularly, you know, they gave him the pass on, well, you know, he plays in a division with T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett. And they made it like, well, you know, we don't see those kind of guys over here in this section of the NFL. Yeah, you do. Here comes one who's, you know, right up there. And so to me, that's a big key to this one. You got to find ways to stop him. And, you know, what's your faith meter on that based on the fact that they had two pretty good games? You know, I am still Arizona, you know, the gift of Glendale does not convince me that the Titans' problems are solved. Are things getting better? Yes. Is Max Crosby the kind of guy that will show us if that really means something or if it's going to be a jagged line as opposed to a steady incline? Absolutely.
We'll have more with Paul. Go ahead, Joe.
All right, real fast. Crosby will be coming at Latham, I think, all day, right? But that's pretty much he's always on that side, isn't he? Almost.
I think so. But also, I think, you know, they're going to look at where the Titans' weaknesses are. And if he's not blowing up Latham, I don't know why they wouldn't say, well, Dan Moore's pretty weak over there.
Let's open the man door.
Let's go look.
We'll have more with Paul Kuharski coming up next. Take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharski with us from paulkuharski.com, taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. PK, you spoke to John Fossil yesterday, who said he did not have concerns with Joey Sly. We talked a little about Joey Sly yesterday and the run that he's on right now. Now, he did bounce back and kicked the game winner. It was a little bit of a shaky game winner, but he kicked it anyway, and it counted, and it went through. But he's missed a lot of field goals / extra points as of late. So as we move forward here, starting on Sunday against the Raiders, how shaky do you think the ground is for Joey Sly, and how close do you think they are to, if it continues to be a problem into next week, maybe looking at changing things up at kicker?
Well, I think they're going to defer to him, to Fossil. And I think to a degree, he certainly deserves that. But look, they are awfully kicker reliant. The thing is, you know, does the kicker on the street, you know, who comes in and hits 10 of 10 on a practice field, you know, they probably set him up with a holder and a, God, what can I snapper?
Long snapper.
Snapper and a holder.
Football?
You know, does that – yeah, and a football.
K-ball?
Yeah, and a K-ball that they get into the game. Maybe they do the whole operation. you know, does that tell you that this guy's going to be better? I think, you know, you want to avoid the carousel if you can.
No doubt.
And Sly, at his best, has been superb. So I think you do everything you can to work him out of it. This missed extra point, he hit super fat and took a big chunk of grass. So it's a different kind of miss, but it's a miss, and it puts you in a bad spot. That you got to get every point you can when you're scrambling for a comeback like that. So he really needs a clean game where he takes everything that they can get from him. You know, Hecker was great. And the other thing that Fossil said, they had three penalties on special teams, and he kind of talked like Jim Washburn used to talk, the defensive line coach who had, you know, Curse and that group, where he was willing, and Fisher was willing on his behalf, to take a certain amount of penalties based on aggressiveness. You know, if they were a little twitchy and jumped a little bit, he thought, well, the trade-off is when we're twitchy and we time it up right, we're getting a 8-yard sack. And Fossil said you know, we're willing to take a couple penalties out of competitiveness and aggressiveness. So that's interesting.
I want to apologize for my usually I'm able to deal with the the text line. The sun is beating me down right
now. Is there no other place in Florida to sit other than where you are?
Well, I think people are sleeping inside.
You get Rex out there and just fry him on the deck.
I mean, I've put on.
They don't have doors on their bedrooms, and.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm sitting here. I'm trying to not.
Note to self: next rental should include an umbrella on the patio.
Yeah, I'm looking around. Yeah, there isn't one, is there? But I can't really deal with the text line today.
So he's saying is, Robbie, take over the text line,
yeah,
please.
Well, someone was trolling me on on the Arch Manning. I mean, Robbie, like, how many times did I scream about Arch Manning?
You ridiculous. Regularly were.
I cried about it way more than I should have.
That's true. You did.
But it was it's like ridiculous. No more planning for Manning. As someone texted sun wasn't in my eyes and I could read the text line.
He's been awful. There's no getting around it.
Is that your question for PK?
Yes. I agree that Arch Manning has been awful. And also, I don't understand how you could pick Penn State to win a national championship. He's a choker. And the idea that you think that James Franklin would leave of his own volition tells me you don't really know James Franklin. I mean, that's the proudest, cockiest man. I mean, if he thinks there's a job better than Penn State, which I find it hard to believe, he would think he's qualified for that. He's not leaving of his own volition. He thinks he's the greatest football coach in the history of football.
This happens all the time where coaches say, you know what, then I'll just go someplace where they'll appreciate me. Like Calipari just did going to Arkansas. Now, he'd have to have a viable program interested in him, and I don't know what that would look like, but like if a Florida were interested in him and, you know, whatever, Florida couldn't get who's their dream candidate.
Who is their dream candidate?
I guess, I mean, there's talk of Gruden.
Spurrier reincarnated? Places.
Yeah. But he would go. He would absolutely go. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to a group of five team, but I think that, you know, that sometimes these things get to the point where scenery, you know, it's just everybody needs to change scenery. And by the way, this whole, this guy never done anything. How could you ever pick him to do anything? Again, that's what people said about Andy Reid, Paul. That's what people said about Andy Reid for how long? 15 years? He's a great coach. You know, he wins a lot. Chokes in the big moments. Can't win the big games. Okay, well, now what do they say? I mean, people, this happens all the time. And then sometimes people actually do win the game.
Oh, absolutely. But James Franklin's just I don't want to call him a loser. I dislike him severely personally.
Yeah. Well, right. So you're letting that cloud your judgment.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. As long as we're all in agreement then.
Yeah. I mean, the guy said that you're a loser in life if you didn't take the Vanderbilt experience. And then I asked him, hey, is that kid that went to Princeton, is he losing out in life? And he couldn't face the question. He couldn't acknowledge that maybe a kid leaving Vanderbilt for Princeton actually was going to do okay.
You use Princeton as an example?
Well, he had a kid Columbia? Transfer to Princeton. He didn't have a kid transfer.
That was actually
to
a specific example.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Rexford's
not. What if they went
well
to Columbia?
Today?
No, there was no Columbia involved in the conversation. What he did there is, because he's a big baby, he said, let me tell you about this trip our team took to Tanzania. And I think about this conversation once in a while. I'm thinking about it now, and I really wish I said, well, James, it was nice having you on. Take care. Click.
Just hung up on him right there.
It would have been
just beautiful.
So it felt so good. I thought we were on the same page about the conversation we were going to have. We thought we're on the same page about the conversation we're going to have, but we have absolutely no interest in talking about your team's trip to Tanzania. We wanted to talk about football and some of the statements you've made. Have a nice day. Click.
We have learned today two people high on PK's enemy list: John Smoltz, James Franklin.
We're building the enemies list. So Julia Louis Dreyfus was on Kimmel lately, and her dad was on Nixon's enemy list.
Okay,
and he had the newspaper list of Nixon's enemy list hanging in their house. So she brought it to show it.
Yeah,
but it was so long. Like she said, he's in there somewhere, but I don't know where. But it was an enormously long list. So my goal is to have a list that long.
Oh, I've got faith in you.
Yeah.
I've got faith that you can do it. I think you can pull it off. We'll have more with PK coming up next. Take your questions on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. PK with us for the rest of the show. PK, we saw Tajay Spears return to action, kind of. I think he had four touches in the game coming off the high ankle sprain. As he gets back in the fold and he gets healthier and healthier, presumably, over the next couple of weeks here coming off the injury, how involved do you expect him to be with the offense, and what sort of things can they do with him that maybe they haven't gotten to yet with the offense?
Well, through 4 weeks, they had thrown to running backs as little as anybody in the league. Understandably so, based on their personnel. I think in the interest of mixing things up, you'd like – look, in the preseason, he looked really good before he got hurt in terms of his quickness and his ability to get things done in space. Can they create things where they get him the ball in some space? I mean – you watch some of these games. You watch the Monday night game, Jags and Kansas City, and you just see people getting the ball, you know, towards the perimeter, close to the line of scrimmage with room. And the Titans have not been able to create those scenarios. And I think that's a big, big part of their offensive problem. And I don't know how they change that. I don't know if they can change that. But that's the if I'm listing what is the difference between the Titans and a most not even great offenses, like an average NFL offense, that's a big part of it. And if they can solve that, I mean, if they get anywhere close to solving that, Spears has to be a part of it.
This does bring up a question I wanted to ask both you guys, and I apologize if you hit it hard yesterday, but who's because you mentioned the Jags, PK. I mean, the Jags and the Colts. We've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun actually at the expense of both of those organizations. So who is owed the bigger apology right now? Jags and Jags fans or Colts and Colts fans?
I mean, I think the Colts, because when I saw Daniel Jones was the quarterback, I just laughed. I was like, well, they're gonna be awful. At least with the Jags, like, you know, I had no idea. You know, we joke about their 12-year-old general manager and Liam Cohen coming in as head coach. But, like, you know, they had Brian Thomas. Like, Trevor Lawrence is not great, but Trevor Lawrence has played reasonably good football at times throughout his career. So, like, you knew there was something there in Jacksonville. I didn't expect him to be 4-1. But, the Colts look fantastic. Colts could be 5-0. I think the most impressive thing I've seen from them actually came in their loss to the Rams. Like, they absolutely should have won that game. And yeah, I think that they're legit. And I did not at first, but I think they're pretty good.
Oh, I severely underrated the Colts. I you know, didn't know what the Jags would be, but I thought they had a chance. I thought the Colts would be bad, and I thought that they would clean house after the season. So I
Chris Ballard, lifetime appointment, man.
Apparently yeah. So.
Hey, listen, the thing is, you look at them, and it's not like they've had any transformational free agent signings. Like, this is like a lot of draft picks that are like have gotten better, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, they actually have quite a few good young players, like good young skill players, some good guys on D. You got to tip the cap, right?
It's a stay the course thing, too. I mean, I think Steichen certainly showed some promise, but I don't think anybody thought, like, hey, you got to stick with this guy and things will work out in the long run. Ballard, like you said, has been there forever. And if you're looking for a case for patience, I mean, that was a matter of them finally finding a quarterback and like you said, like waiting and giving some time for their draft picks to pan out. You know, we did say yesterday, like, kind of two extremes here. Jags, you know, in the first year of the young coach after a lot of turnover, and Colts with a long stick with it. I mean, it's not like Steichen's been there forever, but Ballard has. Two extremes in terms of approach.
So on the
both of them working better than the Titans.
Well, there's no doubt about that. So, PK, we've talked a lot about the offense and Ward's performance in the fourth quarter against Arizona. Do you take anything at all away from that as it relates to Bo Hardigree and the play calling? Like, it's a situation where you're trailing in the game. Like, it's not like it's a normal first three quarters of the game football situation. Like, they had to go soft zones, all those things. So, there's limited, I guess, play calling that you've got at your disposal because everybody knows you're throwing the ball. But is there anything at all you take away from it on the Bo Hardigree front?
Well, he's felt success. I mean, I think that is a big part of it. You've felt success, and there's a certain confidence level. But, yeah, the Raiders aren't coming out sitting on the lead like the Cardinals were doing. And, again, the Cardinals completely botched that game. But it's more about their three stupid plays than it is about sitting on 21-6 because all the evidence was sitting on 21-6 against the Titans with a bad play. And it really shouldn't have been 21-6 because, you know, the running back lets the ball go at the goal line, you know, and that would have iced the game.
Yeah.
So, I think, you know, Cam and the receivers and the line and the defense getting a three and out, those are all real things that happened. So you don't have to put an asterisk on it and say, but the Cardinals were doing this. Maybe on the play calling front, you have to do that a little bit more. So the players in practice had success doing their thing. That's significant. Play calling wise, I think, you know, they're saying, well, you know, we were doing it against some softer zone coverage and everything, and that's not going to apply to what we do coming out of the gate against the Raiders. Nevertheless, hey, what we did worked, and so let's show that what we do against what the Raiders open in can work.
How much, as absurd as this was, how much does just the result have a chance of doing anything positive inside the building?
Well, I think, you know, Lockett said this kind of doubles down your buy-in, you know. A lot of guys threw around resiliency, you know, a week after that was my big question. So, and some of them with the undertone that it had been a conversational topic during the week. So you're welcome for that. But you know, they were resilient again. You know, I hit on this yesterday. That doesn't mean they were resilient in the first four games where they showed absolutely no relentlessness or resilience, but good for them that they found it in this situation. And now let's see some more of it. I think that question, Joe, everybody wants to know, you know, what does it mean for them going forward? And we're not going to find out until, 3 o'clock Central on Sunday, what it means. And then if it means something on Sunday, you know, then let's see if it means anything against Vrabel.
Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Andrew to the program. Andrew, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning. Enjoying the conversation. I love the Titans talk, especially when we're winning. And so I have a different take, though. I think that just like the Titans lost games due to silly mistakes and mishaps, this time I look at the glass half full. We capitalized off of their mistakes.
Absolutely.
That's how I like to look at it. Like, you know, yes, we crossed a bridge. The team found a way to win, and that's how you built momentum. And I also think that you don't fire the head coach. Give him time to do his job. And it would be nice if any Adam Strunk came out and did the same thing as the owner in Detroit did, which is come out and stand by your guy. You hired him, tell everybody it's going to be a process, and say, let's stick with it. Give him time to do his job. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Andrew.
I mean,
appreciate
I don't think she needs to do it now after a win. I think things have cooled considerably.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if they go out and embarrass themselves, things kind of restart. But I think the whole cycle kind of – he's bought time with that. He's eased things.
But the Campbell thing, we need to, you know, it needs to. I understand the record and everything, but like, even when Martha Ford said that about Dan Campbell, it was not a situation where like coaching was seen as a primary culprit of the team's issues. And here they absolutely have been this year, right? Like, I mean, why? I mean, Amy's not going to say something like that because I don't think it's true.
Well, number one, she's not going to say anything anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yes, of course. But I mean, even if this were an owner who was public at times and you know, respected the people who, you know, act as a personal ATM for her enough to, you know, speak to them every once in a while, I don't think that would be the messaging, right? Like, yeah. There's no way that's the thought inside the building.
Not, I totally agree.
No. I mean, the thought inside the building is please let him improve dramatically in these categories to the point where they could be we could say they're a non-issue.
Right. 615-737-1025, our phone number. One more segment with PK coming up next. Take more of your questions on the Titans. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Paul Kuharski with us here on the program, taking your thoughts on the Titans. Let's head to our phone line. Welcome in Trey to the program. Trey, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing good, buddy.
Great.
Hey, PK. Hey, I want to ask you a question. Without the Luke plays that we had at the end of the game on Sunday, how realistic do you think the Titans' chances are on winning this game on Sunday? Because I think because the Raiders got ran up on last Sunday, they're going to come out fast. And do you think we'll be able to match the points with the Raiders? And y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Trey.
I mean, the Raiders are no offensive juggernaut. So, I mean, this is a good game to follow that game.
Yeah.
But I'm still not going into any game thinking the Titans are going to win. I think they're in the best position they've been in a long time to win, in that they should have juice in a way that they haven't and confidence in a way that they haven't. But, you know, you use the baseball adage, you know, it's as good as your next day's starting pitching. How does Cam Ward come out? And, you know, I think in the first 10 minutes, we're going to have a feeling like, has this team hit some level of transformation, or do they go back to what they've been? And they're not going to get the breaks that they got. They might get one or two breaks, not of the same scale that they got against the Cardinals. But you got to make your own breaks. So they need to dial it up.
Well, the other thing that is Brock Bowers. Like, he's week to week with a knee injury. And yeah, Pete Carroll said Monday that they're just going to look at him this week. He's dying to play, but there's no answer on that front yet. And if he can't go, I mean, that's a huge thing for the Titans.
I'm just glad Trey called us and didn't use the opportunity to tell us how bad Cam Ward is. So it's maybe true. Maybe there's a lot of things that are starting to
That fourth quarter, it's hard for anybody to be critical.
It was good. Now the defense, you said it earlier, PK. It's like, you know, you get that three now, but it's also that it's along with all those crazy plays that made this possible. This happens so often in football where the team with the big lead puckers up and just, you know, it's like almost like you can sense it on the other side too. Like they're not messing around with anything, and you can get them stopped and you can get the ball back. I still have. Like again, people talking about the best play being like L'Jarius Sneed running fast and almost
almost influencing,
almost having any influence on a play whatsoever. Like, I still have concerns about this defense. I think to your point, this is one of those opponents. There aren't many in the NFL where you go into a game and you feel like the Titans' defense, as constructed, could actually win more than lose. But I don't think there's too many teams you feel that way about it right now. Do you?
No. No. And like, here's a perfect example. Jalen Armour Davis.
Yeah.
We talked to Denard Wilson about him yesterday. He says, well, he really needs to settle into a game. Once he settles in, we're pretty happy with what he does. Well, this is a professional football player. And he needs 8 minutes before he can play? Like, you've got to solve that
issue.
Give up a
couple touchdowns and then kind of get
your
feet wet.
Yeah, right. And then he's great. After we're down 14-0, they're fine. I mean, he bites on a move and he catches up to a guy and he's with him at the goal line. And Xavier Woods is with him too. But we got to settle down after we give up that touchdown to Marvin Harrison Jr., who struggled most of the season, but we give him some confidence where he can beat a two-on-one at the goal line. I mean, just think. I understand Denard's being honest, and it's clear that's the case.
Yeah.
But think about it. One of our starting quarterbacks needs to settle into a game. I mean, that's not a core. You're not talking about a rookie quarterback. We need to get him some easy completion so he can settle into a game. We're talking about a corner who's conceivably going to be one-on-one with the receiver, and the receiver's hearing, oh, well, for the first 8 minutes of the game, I'm going against a guy who needs to settle in.
You know, with Tom Brady's watching the film this week, and he's helping Chip Kelly out over there. What do you think he's saying, Joe? He's saying, hey, Jalen Armour Davis, you better pepper him in the first 9 minutes, baby.
9 minutes, let's go out. After that, scale back because he gets reasonably good.
He gets
to a replacement-level player after that. But before that, he's a UFL guy.
Get some calisthenics in, you know, get some jumping jacks in between series, and then finally really, really feel ready.
I mean, that's the state of the roster.
Yep, no doubt. So you asked Herndon about this yesterday. I'm interested to get your thoughts on it. Cedric Gray, a lot of talk about him.
He will be writing about Cedric Gray. We've changed up our plan after 2 days of war.
There we go. So Cedric Gray coming at paulkuharski.com. What are your thoughts? It's been very noticeable from him the last couple of weeks. You know, Herndon said yesterday he thinks he's playing at a really high level right now. So what do you see from him? How sustainable is it with Cedric Gray?
We have this ongoing conversation in the press room. Who's not the problem? It's a short list.
Yeah.
Cedric Gray is on the list. Cedric Gray is not part of the problem with the Titans. Cedric Gray is a young second-year player who's actually on the growth curve that you want, right? Cedric Gray is not the problem. And That is like a gold star if you're on this team and you're graded as not the problem. Good for him. He's getting better. And, you know, I think he's a guy right now that people should be looking at saying, I want to follow the curve that this guy's followed. He had to fight to overtake James Williams. He's winning the coach's confidence. They're talking well of him.
Brand Cook.
And that's two games in a row.
Mm. Well, they should do like the Buckeyes, the helmet stickers. They should do NTP, not the problem stickers for people. NTP.
Yeah.
That's another NTP for you.
If the Titans had helmet stickers, they'd be like, you know, that we're through five games and there'd be like six stickers.
Simmons
would have
Gray.
A sticker for every game. Gray would have two stickers. Calvin would have Skaronski. One sticker. Skaronski would have a couple of stickers. Yeah. Yeah. Sly would have a couple stickers.
How many not the problems are there?
Sly would have a couple stickers, and then they'd take a couple stickers away.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me those back. Let me see those again.
He'd
end up neutral.
That Buckeye stickers, We Are Sports Center, was a pretty good one.
It's pretty good.
Buckeye.
That was good.
Buckeye.
All right, boys. How are we feeling?
How
are we feeling about your teams tonight? Game four for the Tigers, game four for the Yankees. How are we feeling? Joe, go first. We got about a minute.
Not great. I mean, Casey Mize is going to have to pitch well. You know, this lineup is not a championship middle of the order whatsoever. Riley Green and Torkelson. So they keep coming up not big at all in big moments. But if we can get to game five with Scooble, that's all I want, man. Give me at least one more game of watching Scooble pitch.
Cautiously optimistic. I mean, they're bullpenning. Toronto Blue Jays, you know, were the best team in the AL.
Yeah.
They're bullpenning a playoff game.
It's kind of amazing.
Against the, you know, I don't think Schlittler is going to do what he did last game, but I like the Yankees' lineup chances against a bullpenning game.
Clutch moment from Aaron Judge last night. PK is going to be with me tomorrow on the program as well.
Yeah. Very high or very depressed.
Could be. There's a wide range of what we could see tomorrow.
Don't be too high.
Andrew Burnett will be with us at 7:30 tomorrow. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports at 8 o'clock. Rex Road back on Friday. We hope the gout stays away until then. Joe, we'll see you then. PK, we'll see you tomorrow.
Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.